You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station. The BFM Breakfast Grill. Top interviews you can't afford to miss. Presented by the CIMB Group.
This morning on the Breakfast Grill, we have with us the 47th Premier of the State of Victoria in Australia. While Victoria is geographically the smallest mainland state, it is Australia's most densely populated state and home to Melbourne, Australia's second largest city. Dr. Dennis Napthine, thank you so much for being on the show. Welcome to Malaysia.
It's a real pleasure to be back in KL and Malaysia again. I enjoyed my visit a few years ago, and it's a real thrill to be back here and to be with a very large trade mission from Victoria, where we're looking to develop increased trade opportunities between Victoria and Malaysia.
We'll jump into trade a little bit later in the interview, but first we'd like to get to know you. Now, earlier this month you celebrated your 100 days in office. Have you managed to achieve what you set out to achieve to mark the 100 days in office?
100 days as Premier has been a very hectic ride, but we've certainly done a great deal. We brought down the budget for the year, and with a budget surplus, with continued AAA credit rating, and a record $6.1 billion to invest in new infrastructure to cater for the growth of the economy of Victoria. We've also been very active in major projects. We've committed ourselves to East-West Link, which is an important road project in Melbourne, and that's about a $6 to $8 billion Australian project. And of course, we'd be interested in Malaysian involvement in the construction or investment in that project. So yes, we certainly have achieved a lot in that 100 days, but I've enjoyed every day of it. It's wonderful to have the opportunity to lead a great state like Victoria.
What would you consider your next milestone achieve?
I think the next milestone is to continue to grow jobs and opportunities in Victoria. Since we've been in office, we've grown 66,000 jobs in Victoria, and in the last month, 11,000 alone. And we're an economy that's transforming from a traditional agriculturally based, manufacturing based economy to a modern, dynamic 21st century economy with significant involvement in the service sector, significant involvement in the financial sector, significant involvement in a range of areas that provides the modern economy, and to also transfer our manufacturing from traditional manufacturing to more specialised advanced manufacturing that better suits our relatively high cost environment for manufacturing with the high Aussie dollar.
Right. And if I could just move to the Asian century, which is the hot topic that everyone's talking about right now, specifically for Victoria and for yourself, what does that entail?
Well, the Asian century, I think, is a great opportunity for Victoria. We're very, very proud that in Victoria, we're very much a part of Asia. And certainly, if you look at Southeast Asia, of which Malaysia's a key player, that is an area that's 600 million people, and there's a significant increase in the wealth within these areas and purchasing power of these areas. So that provides opportunities for Victoria to export, provides opportunities for Victoria to have visitors and tourists from Malaysia and Southeast Asia. And of course, that combined with the growth of the economies of India and China and Korea and Japan, who are very established economies, then this area of the world is going to be the driving force of world economic growth over the next several decades. And Victoria is geographically well placed, and the products we have in Victoria are appropriate to help supply that growth and supply the needs of the people in those growing economies. And particularly with Malaysia, one of the great things about Malaysia and Victoria is we already have such an established relationship. Mm-hmm. There's over 350,000 Malaysians who studied in Australia, and a large number of them have studied in Victoria. And so there's already people who understand Victoria, know Victoria, and they're now in senior positions in business and in politics in Malaysia. And that provides a great link. And often their children and grandchildren are now studying in Australia. And there's 40,000 Malaysians who make their home in Australia now. And indeed, my sister is married to a Malaysian who's now living in Australia as a doctor, came out to Australia to study at Monash University and stayed in Australia to operate his practice as a doctor. And so I'm proud that I've got two nieces and a nephew who are Malay, Victorian Australians, and George is from Sabah. So
you've got
real connections,
ties that go down to a personal level. But do you feel that Australia's playing a little bit of catch up here? Because what took Australia so long to realise the firepower that Asia has?
Well, I think Victoria's been very much the forefront. I think some other parts of Australia have been.
So Victoria was first to realise the power of Asia?
Well, very much so. And indeed, we have the Victorian Government Business Office here in KL that serves Malaysia and Southeast Asia. We have got more business offices throughout Asia, in China and India, reopening the business office in Jakarta. So we have had a long-term commitment to Asia. I think some of the other states of Australia have perhaps been a little bit more relaxed because they've been very much endowed with rich resources of iron.
Which other states would you say?
Western Australia and Queensland and Northern Territory, because they're rich in resources.
Right.
Whereas Victoria's always been very strong on education, manufacturing. We've been very strong on our automotive industry. So we've been very much involved with Asian export opportunities, and our agricultural products have found a home in Asia for many decades.
Okay. Well, apart from super trade missions like the one that you're on now, what other things are you doing to really engage with your Asian neighbours?
Well, clearly we have an ongoing presence here with the Victorian Government Business Office. So we as a state, we're the only state that has a specialist Victorian Government Business Office here to promote Victorian opportunities. Mm-hmm. And not just export opportunities from Victoria to Malaysia, but significant investment opportunities from Malaysia into Australia. And today I was with the Tune Group of Hotels, and they were able to announce with me that the first Tune Hotel in Australia will be opened in Melbourne on the 1st of November this year, 225 beds. And of course they've got links and business links with Asia X Airlines.
Right.
And we have 9 flights a week directly from KL to Melbourne and Victoria. So 100,000 visitors from Malaysia to Victoria each year.
Okay.
So we have that ongoing presence for both investment attraction into Victoria and export opportunities from Victoria into Malaysia.
Okay, so very focused in building those business links. But what challenges do you foresee in doing business with Asia, Malaysia specifically?
Well, I think the challenges are reducing significantly. There were perceived challenges in terms of different business laws, tariff barriers, and cultural understandings. But I think now that we have closer working relationships with Malaysia, and we're using the alumni that we have through the Malaysian networks, I think they are breaking down the barriers. And the other thing that we're doing with these super trade missions is bringing a lot of our smaller businesses who previously felt that they weren't able to export because they didn't have large enough businesses, bring them here and showing them the opportunities, having them meet the people, having them understand the opportunities, and those are being very successful in marketing their products into Malaysia and Southeast Asia.
Right. So you spoke a little bit about education in Victoria, and education is one of the most significant exports of Victoria. What will tertiary education, and I know this is a significant is of significant interest to our audience, what would that look like in the Asian century?
I think you'll see greater interchange. We're already seeing in Malaysia, and credit to the Malaysian government to allow Monash University through Sunway to establish here, and I was at their campus yesterday, and it was terrific to see Malaysian students studying alongside students who are doing studies there from Victoria and Australia, students from Africa, from Bangladesh, from the Indian subcontinent, all studying together on the campus there. And I think that campus will grow and develop as a truly international campus. Similarly, there'll be continual flow of Asian students for undergraduate and postgraduate degrees in campuses throughout Australia, and there's 8,000 in Victoria, and I think that will continue. So I think as we develop in the Asian century, you'll see more interchange of students from Victoria and Australia doing parts of their degree, both their undergraduate and postgraduate degrees, here in KL and other parts of Southeast Asia, and similarly students from up here doing some or all of their degrees in Australia.
Right, but when it comes to education, Victoria isn't without its challenges. You know, it's because of its significant export to the state, it's felt the hit of the high Aussie dollar, also the hikes in the changes in policy, if I'm not mistaken, the visa rules that happened a while ago. So that must have impacted the education policy, education quite a bit.
It certainly did some damage to how the number of students, but in Malaysian students actually didn't decrease in numbers. They must love Australia and benefit from the education. But we have worked hard to try and persuade students that the value of education is vital, and that the Victorian education can deliver the outcomes. So we are doing two things. Firstly, we are encouraging students to still come to Victoria, and the Aussie dollar's dropped 10% in the last few weeks, which will help.
And well, we'll take some time to catch up to see the admission
and
numbers.
And we're working with the federal government on improving visa access and visa requirements. But we're also working hard to take our courses to students in throughout Asia, and they can be by use of technology, use of campuses located with Swinburne and Monash here, and Curtin from Western Australia are all here, and there are campuses being set up in India and in other parts of Asia, so that we're seeking to take our educational expertise into the Asian region, at the same time also using technology so that students can perhaps need to spend less time in Australia, but can complete
some
of their work
in
using technology and support it locally. And I think that provides the advantage. But I would not like to see students to do the whole course by technology, because I think one of the great benefits of students travelling is the actual immersion into the culture. So Victorian students coming to KL, one of the great benefits is not the course they learn, it's what they learn by living in this wonderful community, in this wonderful multicultural environment, and immersing themselves on a daily basis in Asian life.
Okay. I'm speaking to Dr. Dennis Napthine, the Premier of the State of Victoria in Australia. After this, more about Victoria in the Asian century and Dr. Napthine's plans for the state.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good morning, I'm Melissa Idris, and today on The Breakfast Grill we have Dr. Dennis Napthine, the Premier of the Australian State of Victoria. Dr. Napthine, let's talk a little bit about the recent decisions by Ford to close its manufacturing operations that's in 2016. That will result in 1,200 jobs. Industry analysts reckon that it could jeopardise up to 10,000 manufacturing jobs. How will this have an impact on employment, especially given with the Asian century, car manufacturers are just looking to make a better profit elsewhere, in cheaper...
Yeah, it's disappointing that Ford have made a decision in 2016 to cease vehicle manufacturing in Victoria, and that will cost 1,200 jobs. Mm. But we have confidence in the future of vehicle manufacturing in Australia, and indeed Toyota have just announced a significant profit and put on 140 extra staff. The difference was that Toyota aggressively exported their product, as well as producing for the Australian market, they exported significantly into the Middle Eastern market. Okay. And indeed, recently I was in Dubai and United Arab Emirates, and in Abu Dhabi and Dubai, every taxi you get in is a Camry made in Victoria. So they have a different approach. So yes, it is a blow to lose Ford after 90 years of manufacturing, but they will still retain their product development facilities there, their testing facilities there, and we believe we will diversify our economy so that we have opportunities to diversify the economy to pick up that employment. And we have, in Victoria, created 66,000 new jobs in the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. So we believe we can create new employment opportunities, and our unemployment level is now fallen to 5.4%. So we have a strong economy, a diverse economy, and I believe that while it is disappointing, that we'll be able to create new jobs for those people to move into.
Was there anything that your government could have done to persuade Ford otherwise?
We discussed it directly with Ford, and I actually asked that very question. I said, Is there anything I can do as Premier of Victoria to persuade you to not close these manufacturing? They said no, it had been decided. They said there were the volumes of only 40,000 vehicles a year on a world scale was far too low to get productivity and efficiency. And it was costing twice as much per vehicle to manufacture it in Victoria compared to Europe, and four times as much compared to some of their Asian plants.
So what is it? Is it labour costs, or is it the energy costs, or is it just a combination of everything?
It's a combination of everything, and particularly when you're on lower volumes, because these plants were set up decades ago, and you're seeing more modern plants in India and other parts of Asia that are now producing 300,000 and 400,000 vehicles per year, not 40,000 vehicles per year. And when you've got those economies of scale, you can reduce your cost per vehicle, and Ford just couldn't match that. And so the other thing that was happening is more Ford were losing market share in Australia with freer trade across the world, which I support, and the Australian government supports freer trade. We benefit in Australia from freer trade, but one of the downsides of that is we had more vehicles coming in from around the world, providing more competition and choice for the consumer, which is good, but the consequence of that is the Ford market share was dropping in the marketplace.
Well, the reason why this Ford case is getting so much coverage is because of the money that the government's been ploughing into the auto industry. So what do you think it takes for Australia to have a vibrant auto industry, given its high currency and the high labour costs?
Well,
and the carbon tax, of course.
The carbon tax is an issue. It adds to our costs, and perhaps with a change of government in Australia, we may have a different approach to carbon tax in the middle of September, but we'll leave that to the Australian voters. But what I think we do can have a vibrant auto industry. I think Toyota is showing us a way that you've got to have an industry that's efficient. It's got to produce vehicles that the local market want, but you must also produce vehicles that are available on a world export market. And some of our vehicle manufacturers were spent too long manufacturing large vehicles, and with the modern demands for smaller, more fuel-efficient, more environmentally friendly vehicles, some of our traditional manufacturers like Ford were left behind. But I think General Motors Holden and Toyota have got the mix better, and I think they are also looking at export opportunities, so there are those opportunities for manufacturing to continue. And in terms of government investment into our automotive, the benefit is not just in terms of automotive, it's the whole skill chain down our supply chain. So it helps our broader manufacturing skill development, the broader flexibility of our manufacturers, and a number of the manufacturers who are in the supply chain to automotive are now adapting those skills to a whole range of other advanced manufacturing that provides them new opportunities as times change.
Well, if I understand correctly, Proton has some investment in Victoria. Will that impact our car makers?
No, I don't think it will. In fact, I think the free trade agreement will give an opportunity for some of the supply chain for Ford and General Motors. For example, Hella, which is a product manufacturer in Australia, who supply Proton now, will be have an opportunity to supply Proton even cheaper and better products.
And that's under the free trade
Under the free trade agreement, because there's be no tariffs, or there's a reducing tariff level on automotive components. So there's opportunities for other automotive component suppliers who have been supplying Ford, have been supplying Toyota or Holden, to look at opportunities to supply those components into the Malaysia market, and similarly, vice versa.
Well, I read last year that business investment in Victoria had hit a plateau after doubling in the past few years. And there was also a survey of business confidence that showed a bit of a drop across Australian businesses. Victoria was hit the hardest. Do you think things have changed a year on?
Oh, things have changed.
What's changed?
In the recent times, the business confidence in Victoria is now at the highest levels in Australia. And I think what has changed is that in our recent budget, we've outlined a solid financial management. We've also outlined significant infrastructure investment that We've got a $4.8 billion infrastructure investment in new hospitals and health services. It's employing large numbers of people. We've announced the stage one of the East-West Link, which is a $6 to $8 billion major infrastructure project. We're doing a $5 billion regional rail project. So people can see in Victoria there is a significant degree of confidence driven by large infrastructure projects, driven by diversification of the economy, and we're seeing through that in the last month, whereas Australia, all over Australia, there's 1,000 new jobs created, but there are 11,000 in Victoria. So Victoria made sure that Australia had a positive jobs growth, but all those jobs mainly were in Victoria.
Why do you think it was so low last year, though?
I think there was uncertainty about the future and about the future of the economy, but I think that people are now seeing in Victoria benefits of a diverse economy rather than perhaps seeing concerns about the manufacturing future. They understand that Victoria now has a significant services sector, we have a significant financial sector, we have a significant advanced manufacturing sector, tourism, hospitality, and agriculture. And agriculture is really growing strongly. We did have a number of years of dry seasons, of drought, which badly affected our agricultural industries and damaged confidence. But the last 2 years we've had good winter rains and good crop productions, and we've had a record level of exports through our Port of Portland, which is largely agricultural products. Record level of export through the Port of Geelong, again largely driven by our grain trade, and we had a record level of exports through the Port of Melbourne in the last full financial year. So there is those figures give people the confidence that there is a resurgence in trade opportunities. And we only are 3% of Australia's land mass, yet we produce nearly 30% of our agricultural products, and the vast majority of our dairy products, which are a big export earner in Asia.
Right, Mr. Premier, if I could just wrap up. It's about less than 100 days to the Australian elections. What are you expecting to see in the lead up to the to polling day?
I think in the Australian elections, I think there'll be increasing divide in the Australian community
about polarisation
about who people will vote for. But people in Australia fundamentally want the election over and done with. They want an election as soon as possible, and I think that's having a dampening effect on confidence while in the lead up to the election. I think every Democratic...
It was a long campaign.
Long campaign. Every Democratic country around the world finds that confidence drops in the lead up to the election because of the uncertainty.
We've seen that recently.
Yeah, when you have uncertainty, business confidence drops. A consumer confidence and consumer spending drops, and when you have a long campaign of several months, that has a cumulative effect. As soon as the election's over, I believe there'll be a huge bounce in confidence and activity, and I think we'll all benefit from it.
One last question very quickly. What issues do you think resonate the most with Australian voters this time around?
I think competent management, financial management, competent management, people who can announce their policies and will stick to their policies. People who keep their election promises will be very, very important.
Good to hear that. All right, thank you so much for speaking with us. That was the Premier of Victoria, Dr. Dennis Napthine. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
I'm Melissa Idris for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by the CIMB Group, Southeast Asia's leading universal bank. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.